Evan Kleiman, and this is Good Food on KCRW and KCRW.com. Organic produce is always better. Maybe, but maybe not. Find out what organics mean at a local farmer's market. And something about this economy just makes me want to put food up for winter. I'll tell you how to can and preserve food in small batches. No big commitment or giant kitchen required. Plus, learn about some new wines that you may not have heard of. But first, let's check in with Laura Avery, manager of the Santa Monica Farmers Market, to see what's fresh this week.
This is Laura Avery with the Market Report. We have managed to catch up once again with Amelia Saltzman, who, of course, is the author of the Santa Monica Farmers Market Cookbook, now in its third printing. And Amelia's here, as always, shopping the market and helping us with inspirational dishes. So, Amelia, what have you got to inspire us with today?
Well, it's August. That means eggplant. And I have really been enjoying roasting thick slices of eggplant and then chopping them with herbs and seasonings into a caviar and wrapping them in basil leaves and just popping it into your mouth. So that's the overview. I am loving this dish. Basically, what you do is buy a couple of globe eggplants, the round eggplants. Get a couple of pounds of eggplant and cut them into thick slices, say a good half inch thick. And then what I like to do, and here's the first trick, make a couple of parallel slits in the center of each slice and slice up some garlic and stick a piece of garlic into each little slit. Now, you know how sometimes when you're roasting and then something and you want to season it with garlic and then the garlic burns? Mm-hmm. This is great because the eggplant protects the garlic from burning, and yet you're perfuming the inside of the slice of eggplant. I mean, it's just brilliant. Put them on the sheet pan. Drizzle maybe a tablespoon or olive oil per side. Season them with salt, a little black pepper if you like, and roast them for about a half an hour. Then when they're cool enough to handle, just chop them up with some fresh parsley, some red wine vinegar, a little extra olive oil, some capers would be good, or maybe some olives, something like that. Just chop it all up really fine. And you can make this a day ahead if you want, but it's just great. It'll really keep. You'll get a couple of cups worth of this. And it's great to use as an appetizer. And instead of doing it on bruschetta, which would be great, what I've had the greatest time doing is wrapping a little bite's worth in an herb leaf. So I've been using basil. Italian basil is lovely. You are adding one more layer without any extra work, really, of flavor. And so you get this like big burst going on in your mouth. It's just fantastic.
Right, and you just take the leaves off the stem, put them in a pile on the plate, and just scoop and wrap and
eat.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
And it's so beautiful because you've got this wonderful pile of fresh herbs, fragrant on the table, and this bowl of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great party food.
Okay, Amelia, great use for a very abundant vegetable for the summer. And thanks so much. I love the garlic idea. That's good. Now that it's August, we have a fresh crop of dates coming out of the one area in California where all dates are grown, and that's out in the Coachella Valley. And we're talking with Alvaro Batista, and he's an organic date farmer. He's back now with fresh dates. And Alvaro, we just ate one each of your honey and your kadrawi, and they are so soft, you literally don't have to chew them. How do you pick them when they're this soft and keep them intact?
Right now, we're going up in the forklift and getting one by one. It's you can't check the bunch right now because they just fall apart. So you have to get like every single one by hand, by fingers.
So let's talk about these kadrawi. These are the ones I heard you describe to a customer as tasting like brown sugar.
Yeah, those kadrawis are amazing. I mean, they literally do melt in your hands. If you squeeze them hard enough, it'll just melt. But those are the ones that taste like pure brown sugar. You can stuff them, put them in the freezer for about an hour, and that'll be much easier to cut them and stuff them with peanut butter, cheese, whatever you like to try them with.
Wrap them with bacon. You could roast them in the oven with a little bit of bacon on them.
Yeah, you can do that, but that's the majul is the special one for that one. That one's coming in hopefully next week. If we keep on getting this This heat wave. Yes.
Okay. Now these honey dates, these are really, really, they're even softer than the kadrawis. Those really just dissolve.
They're amazing. And I got a mace too.
So good. And you will never find these in the store. They're too tender. They're too soft. You can only get them here at the farmer's market.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to get a shelf life for kind of these dates because they're so soft, they're just spoiled. Sometimes they ferment so fast. That's why you have to always keep them fresh. Refrigerate them right away. This is the perfect time. And if you want to enjoy a perfect date right now, it's from here to hopefully till December. They'd still be this juicy.
That was Alvaro Batista, and he has these fresh dates. And these are not a date you even need to chew. You can put them in your mouth, and they melt, and they're delicious. And, of course, as he said, you can chill them and put things in them and keep enjoying them with 100 different toppings. You know, our farmers markets thrive because farmers grow fantastic produce and because customers come here and they appreciate it. And the crowds are getting bigger and bigger, and as economic times get tougher and tougher, people want to come to the farmers market to really get the best, and they know the farmers are growing with integrity, with love, and with appreciation for you, the customer. And I'm hoping that everybody who's listening will translate that into a pledge for the show that they enjoy listening to every Saturday here at 11 o'clock on KCRW. It's a treasure, and it's something that we can't live without. We want to hear about these stories. We want to talk to these farmers. We want to support the farmers. They are important, and dollars have to speak louder than words at this time of year. So please join me in subscribing. Pick up the phone, take a minute, and support your show. Keep the farmers market on the air, and keep this station going. It's a great treasure. For the Market Report, this is Laura Avery.
Read Laura Avery's weekly blog post at kcrw.com/goodfood. There you'll see pictures of what she just talked about and find the recipe for eggplant caviar. I would guess that most listening to this show feel unequivocal about organic foods being better than conventionally grown produce. Well, not so fast. Russ Parsons from the LA Times explains why discriminating against non-organic foods at farmers markets shouldn't be such a black and white decision. That's next on Good Food here on KCRW and KCRW.com. Organic versus conventional. For some, the answer is clear. But to others, the answer isn't always cut and dry, especially at farmers markets. Russ Parsons, food and wine editor for the Los Angeles Times, has been musing about the organic versus conventional conundrum. So what do you do?
I hate to say it, but you just need to embrace complexity. Because I think what people are looking for is they're looking for a simple answer to a very complicated question. They've got kind of the idea that organic means, you know, no pesticides, and that conventional means lots of pesticides. And so it's a very black and white decision about which is better, which has the higher load. And the reality of it is so much more complicated than that, because there's a great gray area as organic producers have become more and more industrialized. In the first place, a lot of the kind of the initial philosophy that governed organic growing it's still embraced by a lot of farmers, but it's not part of the code that determines whether something can be certified organic or not. And on the other hand, there are a lot of conventional farmers that are doing things like composting and growing cover crops that are beneficial, growing crops in between the rows that are beneficial for insects that will eat the bad insect. It's not black and white. There's a huge gray area.
This idea that you could go to the farmer's market and ask just a simple question of the farmer and get an answer back that will help you make a decision is false logic.
You know, you see farmers who aren't organic and they'll have up signs that say no spray. You know, well, what does no spray mean? But just because somebody's organic doesn't mean that they're not spraying either. It means that they're not spraying with from the list of chemicals that aren't banned from organic practice. And so you get into all of these kinds of very complex agricultural questions. For example, copper sulfate is used as a fungicide and it's approved for organic use, but it's really, really weak. And so as a farmer who goes out and sprays a ton of copper sulfate every week in order to keep fungus down in his peach orchard, is that better than somebody who's using a non-approved fungicide but only sprays minimally and does it twice a year when it's absolutely necessary? You know, if you listen to some people talk about it, in the first place, organics are all small farmers. You know, they're practically saints. And eating that food will make you will find enlightenment. And conventional, on the other hand, is you might as well be mainlining Agent Orange. The reality, of course, is so much more complicated. Mas Masumoto is an amazing peach farmer. He's organic. There's nobody who is a better peach farmer than Mas Masumoto. There are other farmers who are as good as Mas Masumoto, and they're not organic. And so trying to say one of them is evil and the other one is good, I think, is at best an oversimplification.
Do you still try and shop locally as much as possible?
I try and shop it locally as much as possible, absolutely. I'd have to emphasize as much as possible. I've got a real job, you know, just like all of your listeners. I work downtown from 8 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night usually. I can't go to farmers markets every week. I try to go to one probably every week, either Saturday or Sunday, or, you know, if I can take a morning off and go to the Wednesday market. But you know what? I can't be perfect. What I try and tell people is that every time that you're buying food, you're casting a vote. And you just want to make sure that your good votes outweigh your bad votes. So, yeah, I try and buy as local as much as possible. But there's times when, you know, I've just got to stop at Trader Joe's and pick up something for dinner. And that's not something that I'm proud of, and it's not something that I say that I can argue for philosophically. It's just the practicalities of life.
Let me ask you another question about this conventional versus organic. On those days when you find yourself in the supermarket, do you reach for the mass-produced organic, the earthbound organics, the bagged lettuces, and the Horizon?
I try and make my decisions based on flavor or on what I think the flavor is going to be. And so when I have to say that I really don't pay that much attention when I'm shopping at the supermarket to the organic label. What I look for is what looks freshest and what looks like it's going to be best. And if it happens to be Earthbound Farms, I mean Earthbound Farms, which farms like 40,000 acres of California, then it'll be organic. But if it's not Earthbound Farms, if that stuff looks wilty and the other stuff looks fresher and crisper, that's what I'm going to go for. You know, the thing I think people forget about is I think they're so removed from the farm that they envision it as kind of a manufacturing process. But they forget that really good farming, growing food that has flavor, is a talent. And it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of right choices, a lot of good guesses. It's not something that you can just go out and say, okay, I'm going to grow stuff with good flavor. For me, good flavor is always the result of careful farming.
Thank you so much, Russ.
Thanks for having me on.
Russ Parsons is the food and wine editor for the Los Angeles Times. Let us know whether you choose organic or conventional and why. Comment on our website, kcrw.com/goodfood. In the old days before refrigeration and in climates where winter meant no access to crops, people canned and preserved fruits and vegetables. Fell out of favor, though, probably because it seemed like you needed to convert your kitchen into an industrial laboratory. Not now, though. I'm going to tell you how to make small batches of preserved fruits and canned vegetables. It's a fun project. Stick around. I'm your host, Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food on KCRW and KCRW.com. You walk through the farmers' markets, and all that summer cornucopia just begs to be preserved. If you want to just put a little toe into the pool of preserving instead of jumping full force into the water, then Eugenia Bones Well Preserved is just a lovely place to start. So you actually learned to do preserving from your dad?
Yes. Well, I learned the way he preserves, which is a little looser than I could comfortably publish. You know, he was sort of freestyling it a lot. But his palette, the canning palette, I picked up from him, of course.
Tell us a little bit about your dad.
My dad is Edward Giobbe. He is in his 80s now. He's still cooking, but not writing books anymore. He was a very early advocate of Italian food the way we've come to know it. He helped break down the spaghetti and meatball model for Italian food and helped many Americans see what Italian food was really like for the first time.
The thing that's so interesting to me about the recipes in this book is you can see that background because you go into preserving in oil and preserving in vinegar. Could you talk a little bit about those techniques and how they lend themselves to small batches? Because the book really does focus on small batch canning.
You can't can the way your grandmother did, where there people were putting up a field of beans, you know, and had a lot of time. So I instead chose the path of small batch canning, which allowed me to fold canning into my daily routine. And literally, if I'm buying something fresh, I'll buy twice as much, which I had a tendency to do anyway because I couldn't resist at farmers markets. And I put up half of it. So at the same, it would be one more burner on the stove working, and I'd be canning, you know, a couple of pints of tomatoes. Or if I was making Foriana sauce, which is one of those goods that are preserved in oil and refrigerated, I would make twice as much, and then I'd eat it for dinner that night, and then in subsequent days, weeks, whatever, I would be able to serve it again with no hassle.
Now, what is Foriana sauce? It's heavily featured in the book.
Foriana sauce is a traditional Lenten dish from the island of Ischia in Italy. And it's sautéed nuts, raisins, oregano, butter, and capers, I believe. You can hold it in olive oil, which acts as a kind of prophylactic to keep spoilers that might be floating around your refrigerator from falling on your food. And it holds up really nicely in the refrigerator, according to the USDA, for 10 days. But I must say I have some very nice vintages in my fridge. It's traditionally used as a pasta sauce, you know, a meatless pasta sauce, hence the Lenten connection. But I found it fantastic, used in a variety of applications.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of preserving. You've used the word spoilers. What are they?
Spoilers are yeasts, molds, and bacteria. And bacteria are that's the big bugaboo in canning, particularly the one that causes botulism. When you're preserving food, you're trying to create an environment to hold the food that is hostile to those spoilers. And different foods require different preservation methods in order to hold, either on the shelf or in the fridge, you know, whether you're curing meat or putting up tomatoes. The data for this, you know, the sort of safety instructions, they're provided by the USDA. And the USDA is always testing new foods as they come into the popular domain. I base my recipes on that data, which is really the most sort of conscientious thing as a writer that I could do.
What are some other quick dishes that you like to throw together that are made easier by something that you've preserved?
Well, I preserve foods that I want to eat to start with. So let's say we start out with something like pickled asparagus, which I've been doing lately. I don't do a lot of complicated ingredients in it. I do a straight-up pickled asparagus because it has more applications at the end of the day. So I'll have a couple of pints that I'll put up a few times, you know, 2 pints at a time. I might do it twice over the course of the spring. And then I'll make a chicken piccata with pickled asparagus or skate wing with brown butter and pickled asparagus. Or when I have surprise company, which seems to happen all the time, especially I have teenagers like lolling around the house all the time, I'll take those pickled asparagus, put them on a platter, and garnish them with sliced hard-cooked eggs and black pepper and a little olive oil. It's fabulous. It's a great way to start a meal, too.
You have produced a really beautiful book that makes you want to dive in to preserving. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Evan.
Well-preserved, recipes and techniques for putting up small batches of seasonal foods is Eugenia Bone's book. It's also this month's selection for the KCRW Good Food Cookbook Club. You can be part of that Angel Club for $32 a month or $365 a year. I'll send you a new title every other month or so. You can join online at kcrw.com/goodfood. There's so many great producers of wine out there. Some of them are small, some of them are hard to find. And our wine guru, Stacy Hunt, came back to us with some of the great producers she's found recently. That's next when Good Food continues on KCRW and KCRW.com. It's really great when you learn about a whole slew of wines that are new for you. But even better is getting to know the personalities of the people who make the wines, the producers. With me today is Stacy Hunt, Good Food's original wine guru. Stacy comes to us from Splash Productions and Duvan Wine and Spirits. And we're talking today about the producers of the wines that were offered for our fabulous dual premiums that Stacy worked out for us. What intrigues you about this particular group of producers?
Well, I was looking when I thought about this, I thought let's find producers that are doing something. All wine producers are passionate. Let's start there. So it wasn't enough that they were passionate. I wanted them to be doing something that was slightly edgy or different, or choosing a region that perhaps people hadn't thought about before, or finding a grape that they never heard of.
Let's talk about the southernmost places that we're thinking of. So let's talk about Baja first.
Well, I particularly chose one by the name of Fernando Martin. Fernando Martin is actually, he's a sixth generation Mexican from France. So his whole family hailed from France. They came from the Provence area of France, and they settled six generations ago in Mexico. And most of the people that came to Baja California are the same people that came to the state of California. Something was going on in their lives that caused them to say, I'm out of here. So you've got the same eclectic group of people in the Baja region that you have in the state of California. So the winemaking takes on a maverick type of...
Yeah, it's a lot of risk takers, adventurers, survivors.
Survivors, adventurers, creative people who didn't fit in the provincial parts of where they began their lives, whether it was six generations ago or a couple of weeks ago. So Fernando Martin opened his first vineyards or planted his first vineyards, his father did, in the outskirts of Ensenada. And that was maybe, 30 some years ago. And if you go and visit his winery, I mean, you'll be very welcomed by him and by his wife and his family there. And he has this very contemporary winemaking facility right smack in downtown Ensenada. And he has his vineyards surrounded by fences. But he's taken out a lot of the vineyards and expanded his winery and really now moved over to the Guadalupe Valley, where he's replanted his vineyards out there.
And what grapes does he concentrate on?
Cabernet, Chenin Blanc, Chardonnay. But I think his song is in Tempranillo, and that's why I chose that one. Because the way he makes Tempranillo is very much the way it's made in the Rioja region of Spain. It's made with a lot of dense fruit, but not balmy fruit. So when you taste this wine and you have it with a grill or a barbecue, I mean, just about anything that you can think of that has some savory aspect to it, this wine is perfect because the fruit just brings out, all of that part of a savory dish that you don't taste if you're just in the umami aspect of the savory.
Okay, let's move from Baja and come up the coast. Let's go to Paso Robles.
Paso Robles. This is an area that many people in California visit and people all over the world visit. Again, I mentioned Fernando Martin has French roots. There are a lot of French roots in Paso Robles from Burgundy and particularly from the Rhone. Triana Vineyards is good old American stock. Austin Hope is the founder and winemaker. It's a family group. And he, in fact, was just named Winemaker of the Year, 2009. So he has done something with his Triana wine. He only makes, you know, this one white wine. And it's a blend. It's a blend of Marsan, Roussan, and Viognier. These are three Rhone varietals. And Viognier is known for its aromatic qualities and is close to being, you know, categorized as an aromatic grape. And it also has a body to it that makes people call it the winter white. We've talked about that.
I love that.
Yeah, the winter white. And also, when you blend it together with these other two, this whole wine, Triana, has taken on this sort of reputation that I call the, you know, the red wine lover's white wine. So this is a white wine to try if you think you don't like white wine.
Okay, so from California, let's go to southern Italy. Let's go first to Calabria.
Yes, Calabria. As we you and I have spoken about many times, the land of spicy food.
Salami, famous for their salumi.
Here, there is a wine grape called Aglianico, and I love to say that name. Aglianico del Vulture is the area that this comes from, and this area is known for producing very robust red wines. You know, this is not a sissy wine at all. You really have to be ready for red wine with this one.
And who's the producer?
The producer is Allegrete, and this is a Reserva, which means the grapevines are older. It stays in barrel a little bit longer, and in fact it's called Barili Vecchio, which stands for old barrel. And so this particular wine, I think, would be a very special wine for a special occasion.
Stacy, thanks so much for giving us just a little taste of some of the people behind the beautiful wine selection that you put together for us for the drive.
Thank you, Evan. It's my pleasure.
Stacy Hunt comes to us from Splash Productions and Duvan Wine and Spirits. Read about the wines Stacy Hunt just mentioned online at kcrw.com/goodfood. Connect with me and other Good Food listeners by becoming a fan of me on Facebook. We do cookbook giveaways, we share food pictures, and lots of stories. Follow me on Twitter, too. I'm at Evan Kleiman, only one N in the last name, please. You can download the show and podcast it, too. Find the Good Food video app and find all the info we talked about at kcrw.com/goodfood. I really hope that you'll consider donating to KCRW. Support the programming you love by listening as a subscriber. Go to kcrw.com/join for as little as $5 a month. I'd be very, very grateful. Thanks so much. The executive producer of Good Food is Jennifer Farrow. Harriet Ells produces this program along with Bob Carlson, Connie Alvarez, and Candace Moyer. I'm Evan Kleiman. See you next week with a full hour of Good Food.